Good morning. I'm Alexis Strauss-Hacker. I'm chair of the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board. Welcome to today's board meeting for the San Francisco Bay Region. We'll call the roll for our board members in just a minute, but first some logistics. Our meetings are hybrid, so in addition to the in-person participants here today, we may also receive public comment through our Zoom meeting platform. If you're not physically present and intend to comment, or think you might be interested in commenting, please be in the Zoom meeting space and not watching through our webcast. If you haven't already received a link for the Zoom meeting, you can visit our website, register through the link on the agenda for today's meeting, and after you register, you'll receive a Zoom login link providing access to our meeting. If you're here in person, thank you. If you wish to speak, you can register online or with the assistance from our team at the registration table outside the auditorium, and we will call on you. And for those in the Zoom meeting, you'll be muted until it's your turn to speak. Our staff will then promote you. Please unmute yourself on your computer or phone so we can hear you. And when you're done speaking and the board members have completed their questions, you'll be placed back on mute. For those in the room here waiting to speak, you'll be called by name when it's your turn. Please make your way up here to the podium so we can best see and hear you. And all speakers have 3 minutes for commentary. Please give us your name and your affiliate organization if applicable when called upon. Thank you for joining us today. I'd like to ask Julie Haas, our board clerk, to call the roll.
Good morning. Board member Ransom.
Here.
Board member Beelen.
Here.
Board member Gunther.
Here.
Board member Batty.
Here.
Board member Kissinger.
Here.
Vice Chair Young.
Here.
And Chair Hacker.
I'm present.
Welcome.
Thank you. We have a quorum physically present for today's meeting and welcome to everyone. Item two on our agenda is the public forum. I'd like to open our meeting to the public forum and remind everyone that the public forum, as you may know, is for items that are not on the agenda today. You can speak on those items at the appropriate time. Items that are not a pending or an impending matter, meaning they're not about to come up on our agenda in the next few months, please consult our board clerk, Julie Haas, who's seated here in the front of the auditorium if you have any questions. I'll call on each of our public speakers. We have one registered. If you're on remote and haven't been called, please raise your virtual hand on the Zoom platform by clicking on the reactions icon on your screen and then on the raise hand icon. And that way we'll know to call on you. Each speaker has 3 minutes, will be timed and notified. There's an online timer visible on the screen. And thanks for your understanding. We appreciate your participation. So may we call on our first public forum registrant?
We have Vico Allen on Zoom from Contact Engineered.
Mr. Allen, please go ahead.
Mr.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you for making room for me here, even though I'm not in the room. My name is Vaco Allen. I'm the regulatory director for Contech Engineered Solutions. And I would like to just read a statement here. Sorry, I'm not usually this boring to listen to, but in the interest of keeping it timely, here we go. So on May 11th, 2022, the third version of the San Francisco Municipal Regional Stormwater Permit was adopted by this water board. In the public comment periods that were provided prior to that hearing and at the adoption hearing, there was widespread objection to the permit for housing projects. There was also a diverse group, including Bay Area Building Industry Association, San Francisco Baykeeper, some permittees, many local civil engineers and construction industry professionals who asked the water board to allow the use of innovative biofiltration systems as part of a low impact development strategy, provided that those systems were proven to provide superior water quality outcomes in full scale field testing. Unfortunately, instead of making changes, the permit was adopted with new restrictions on stormwater designs on affordable housing projects It also failed to provide a pathway for the use of the same innovative high-performance biofiltration systems that are allowed in other contemporary phase one stormwater permits in California. At the adoption hearing, those issues were discussed, and with time running out on the day, Chair McGrath moved to adopt the permit, but with the provision that work groups be formed, comprised of water board staff and interested stakeholders, to meet and discuss these issues and to report back to the water board on progress within a year. Work groups were convened and permit amendments were presented for adoption on October 11, 2023. These amendments were drafted by water board staff and did not have the support of work group participants. For example, leading members of the Affordable Housing Work Group, including the Bay Area Council, San Francisco Building Industry Association, and the Housing Action Coalition, resigned from the group in frustration partway through the process, stating, "It is clear from your staff that this is not a respectful process we can expect to be heard through, so we have no option but to end the pretense that our engagement is meaningful," end quote. The LID Alternatives Work Group amendment was unilaterally developed by the Water Board staff and was called unimplementable in its current form by permittees. It only increased bureaucratic complexity without providing a credible pathway for the use of innovative systems. But at the advice of the Water Board staff, the amendments were adopted anyway in October of 2023. Presumably, sensing a rift between the Water Board staff and the rest of the stormwater community, and a lack of consistency between the San Francisco Water Board approach to land development projects, as other regions.
Mr. Lund, do you want to?
The adoption chair Batty called for a focused work group to be convened. Sorry, I just have less than a minute.
We lost the last sort of 20-25 seconds, so if we could give Mr. Allen back about 25 seconds, and if you want to perhaps turn off your camera, let it not be me that solves IT problems, but I think that do you want to just recap?
Oh, I thought my camera was off this whole time, so.
There we go.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Great. Sorry about that. So the bottom line is that there was a work group to be convened. I'm not sure if you heard that part.
Yeah.
And the focus was effectiveness and innovation, unintended consequences, consistency on LID approaches with other water boards, a pollutant load reduction focus, and recommendations for MRP4. So what I'm here today to do is to ask a question: has this work group been convened? And if not, why not? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. I encourage you and colleagues to continue to be in dialogue with our management team on this important issue. We don't want to have a rift as we go through the all-important implementation of this permit. Do we have any other registrants for a public forum?
Call of hands, see if anyone's online.
Is there anyone online that hasn't registered that wishes to speak? And is there anyone in the room who'd like to speak during public forum? All right, public forum is now closed. Let's move on with the next agenda item, which is a review and adoption of the board meeting minutes from May of 2024. Included in our board meeting packets and posted online are the draft minutes from our May 8th board meeting. Are there any edits or revisions from board members to these minutes? Seeing none, I'm asking for a motion and a second to adopt the May board meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
By show of hands, all those in favor of adopting the May 8th board meeting minutes, please raise your hand. And then are there any opposed? Are there any abstentions? Very well. The May 8th board meeting minutes have been adopted by the board. Let's move to agenda item 4. We'll move to board member updates, followed by the executive officer's report. But first, I'd like to welcome Sean McGuire, member of the State Water Resources Control Board, for some brief updates. Sean, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you, Chair Strauss-Hacker and board members. It's good to see you. I wish I could be there in person with you, but I will do this virtually today. So I just have lots obviously happening at the State Water Board and California water issues generally right now, but I I have a little bit of a forward-looking view and picked the three items that I thought you might be interested in hearing about. So the first is related to stormwater, and that is the cost of compliance of stormwater. And so there was an audit several years ago that found a need for greater statewide consistency in understanding the cost of MS4 permittees' compliance needs with their permits. And so the state board has been working on a policy to address that deficiency for quite some time now. And we just had a workshop last week at our board meeting on that policy, which has been out draft and revised. And so we're in a comment period right now, which has been extended to July 9th to provide time for permittees and other interested parties to review the policy and weigh in on that with their comments and concerns if they have any. So it's obviously complicated. There's 9 regional boards. We have various statewide permits. So there's a lot of different permits with different requirements. And there is an online cost reporting system that has been pilot tested, I believe, even with perhaps some of permittees in your region. And so we're moving forward with that, and hopefully we'll be considering adoption later this year. The next item is one that comes up every year, and that is funding. And there's 2 ways to look at this. One is the funding that we provide to entities for moving their important projects forward, both on the clean water and the safe drinking water side. So in the form of both grants in some cases and low interest loans in others. So every year we have our intended use plan for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund and for the state Safe Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. There's workshops on those issues coming up here in the next few weeks. And as well as our fund expenditure plan for the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund, which is just a drinking water program, part of SB 200 funding that's been provided to us. So made a lot of progress. We funded many, many projects over the last few years, pretty remarkable numbers in the billions of dollars. We are, as of recent times, heading into more lean times in terms of the amount of funding that's available. I believe I've spoken to you on that issue in the past, so won't go over all that again, but I encourage anyone who's listening today, who's interested, who has projects, who has needs for water, drinking water or clean water, recycled water type funding, to please take a look at these plans and attend the workshops if you're interested, as these are scheduled and this information comes out. The last item I wanted to just highlight for you is one that's been several years in the making, and I've probably also mentioned this to you before, but this is the conservation, Making Conservation a California Way of Life regulations have been in development for 5 years now. I've been on the board for 5 years, so I can say with confidence that we've been working on this for 5 years with our partner agency, Department of Water Resources. The regulations are currently scheduled to be considered for adoption on July 2nd. So that's coming up here very quickly. We've had a number of rounds of revisions to the regulations. And some of them look at noting that when you set a water budget for a community to improve water use efficiency, which I think we can all agree is something important and valuable to do, to consider water scarcity in times of climate change and with the challenges that we face, sometimes there can be unintended consequences of that. And so we want to try and avoid and minimize those as much as possible. So things like looking at if a community has to reduce indoor water use significantly to comply, that could reduce flows to the sanitary sewer system and reduce flows to the wastewater treatment facility, which might result in some impacts to those facilities. And so understanding and addressing and working to mitigate those types of issues has been very important to me, and I know the other board members. And another area of recent focus has been looking at if a community needs to reduce outdoor water use or decides that's what they need to do to comply with the budgets significantly. We don't want to have an unintended consequence in terms of trees. Urban shade and trees are incredibly important to all of us, I know. And as temperatures rise, it becomes more and more critical in our cities and communities. And so it's something that we've also looked at very carefully and in fact, just added a new provision to the regulations to accommodate for those types of issues. This is a big deal. It's stemmed from the drought in 2014. So it's been a long time coming and looking forward to moving that process forward here in the next few weeks. So those were the three items I wanted to flag for you today. As always, I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you have on these issues or any others. But again, thank you for the opportunity to share my updates.
Thank you, Sean. Anything that board members wish to bring up? Jane, go ahead.
Good morning, Sean. So hi. I heard this yesterday and it's the second time I've heard it. So I guess I'll just ask you here today. Been hearing information about hedge funds purchasing California water rights. Can you comment on that at all? Do you know what's going on with this?
I've heard the same. So I can comment that I know there's a lot of interest, you know, certainly as water scarcity, like as I mentioned, increases, there's quite a bit of speculation on water rights acquisitions, but I don't have any specific information. Obviously we have a very rigorous water rights priority system and provisions for that, but we don't get into the issues in terms of ownership and who's purchasing what water right directly.
It's I think it's a question that should have some consideration and understanding. So I'll just throw that out there as I hope the state does look into what is happening there in terms of investments and yeah.
Thank you for the flag.
Any others? If not, Sean, you have a busy agenda. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Good to see you.
And you. Let's turn to board members. Board member Batty, update.
I don't have too much to report about today. The only thing that I came with a question about was, first of all, thank you for that really excellent report on PFAS and PFOA last month.
Yeah.
It's continued to be in the news quite a bit. I did go watch the movie Dark Water. Highly recommend. But it has been in the news increasingly. And really, my question today is about, are we as an organization with new regulations coming out soon? There's going to be a lot of public eyes on this. Are we ready with all the information we need to? I'm sure the public will be coming to us with questions.
Thank you. Great question. And yes, I've reviewed the PFAS fact sheet. So as requested last month, staff has prepared the PFAS fact sheet. We're going to be putting it up on our website and we're going to include it in next month's EO report with the link so you could see it. Really nice. Want to give credit to the team. And then as you we talk about PFAS, you know, there's the role of the drinking water agencies, and then there's the role of the regional water boards. And our role is primarily making sure that we're identifying the areas of PFAS where they could, and we're prioritizing areas where it would impact drinking water. And just late last night, we reviewed some FAQs and talking points that staff put together and were working together to finalize with regard in particular to the Livermore Valley, where, you know, you heard Ken Min, who's the water resource manager for that water agency, talking. And I want to give credit to a lot of staff because we have limited resources, and I'll talk about that a little bit in my EO highlights, but we are prioritizing PFAS, in particular investigations in areas such as in the Zone 7 in the Livermore Valley, where it could have impacts to water quality. And we're working very closely with Zone 7. They've had to take wells out of service. They've had to blend to make sure that the water that they're providing to all their customers meets drinking water standards. So I think We are prepared. We've got talking points. We've coordinated with the communications staff I have in Sacramento. So we're prepared. In particular, I think a lot of the questions will focus in the Zone 7 area because that impacts, you know, drinking water.
Yeah. And do we know when the EPA regulations, we expect them to be adopted?
Well, EPA adopted it for the, if I'm correct, they've adopted it for drinking water.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's what's, I think, getting it more in the news now, but we all knew it was coming.
Yeah. Excellent article in, of all places, Food and Wine magazine about where it is found in manufactured food products. Yeah. Good reading.
All right. Board Member Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got two things I wanted to bring to board's attention. First, I had the chance to attend the State of the Estuary Conference last month. And by way of disclosure, I should say that as a past recipient of the Gene Auer Award, I get to go for free. So I don't think I was dipping into my pocket or anything, but in particular, I wanted to draw attention to a presentation on Highway 37, which we've had presentations here, but it's pretty astonishing. And our staff participated, but it was done in a form in which it was like a tag team between regulatory agencies and engineering agency representatives coming up and presenting together. And I just came away with a sense, after also having follow-up conversations with staff members from Caltrans and talking independently to Corps of Engineer staff, that we are living in a time in which our engineering agencies are really, really changing. And I think that we need to be as supportive of that as possible. And I just wanted to tell the staff, certainly if there's anything that as a board member, you know, I can do to help facilitate that, please let me know, because it's very exciting. I was also routinely told how wonderful Region 2 is, how great our staff is, including our talented executive officer. So that was really a wonderful experience. I also wanted to share with you a statement I made to the BCDC, since I'm representing you all, and if I'm going to be opening my mouth there, I think I should share with you what I said. I noted that on June 3rd, in an interview with Fox News, there were three reporters there, and ex-President Trump stated that seas will rise 1/8 of an inch over the next 400 years. And as all of you know, this is a total fabrication, supported by absolutely no evidence whatsoever. And the updated sea level rise guidance just released by the Ocean Protection Council makes that very clear. Sea level's gone up 6 inches in the last 14 years on the Gulf Coast. This is not the first time that Trump has promulgated such a lie, and it certainly won't be the last. But I bring it to your attention because, and again, this is no surprise, the three so-called journalists from Fox News just smiled and nodded and allowed this statement to go unchallenged, even though it is in direct opposition to empirical reality. So that means that millions of Americans are exposed to and influenced by this stream of disinformation. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us who know better to continue to speak out about what is real and to challenge this dangerous disinformation when we see it or we hear it. And I hope you will join me in doing so. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Kissinger?
Nothing from me.
Very well. Board Member Beelen? All right. Board Member Ransom? Vice Chair Young?
None for me, thank you.
Lastly, about 10 days ago, as happens from time to time, the chairs of the 9 regional boards with their executive officers and with our vice chair met with the State Water Resources Control Board members for the day, end of May, last Friday of May. And we talked about a number of things across the boards, but mostly I think We spoke about the challenge of basin plan amendments, and in this case, the focus in a number of boards across the state of how do you amend basin plans for tribal beneficial use. In the case of a few boards, it might be the cultural uses, and in some others, it might be for fish consumption. And how do you get through that? There's a, and Eileen will talk more about budget, but I think many people within the organization know how few person years are available for the water quality standards process and basin plan amendments in general. This has been true for a very long time. And so I think a number of organizations feel the need across the water boards to address basin plan amendments and updates while all these other related things are happening, triennial reviews, the 303 impaired waters list updates and things of that ilk. So there's a lot of pressure on the system to update water quality standards and uses through the basin plan amendment process. And it's a rigorous process. It takes time. I think there's frustration on the part of tribes that are involved with various regional boards as to how long it takes and how much data is needed to underpin those regulatory actions by board. So we had one of what will be many such discussions, and which is relevant to this board as well, as we consider our own basin plan amendments. So it's good to be in touch with the other boards in this way. And it's also a run-up to all of us being invited to meet in October at the so-called Water Quality Coordinating Committee meeting. So a little bit from that. And I'd like to call on our executive officer for her report.
Great. I just wanted to provide an update to the Hunters Point Naval Shipyard item that was in the executive officer's report. Shortly after we put out the board mailing and posted, we got information from the Navy. Last Thursday on June 6th, they notified us that another low-level radioactive object was discovered on the site, and it was discovered on May 2nd. This time, the low-level radioactive object was not discovered as part of the radiological retesting efforts. It was found because a radiation alarm went off as soil and debris was being trucked off-site for disposal. And when the alarm went off, the truck was offloaded and the material was removed and rescreened. And during the rescreening, a brass switch mounted onto a 12-inch metal extension was determined to be the source of the detected radioactivity. The Navy's conducting a root cause analysis of why the object was not previously identified during routine radiological testing before disposal. And we continue to work very closely with our counterparts at the Department of Toxic Substances Control and EPA in working to get the Navy to clean up the site. And we've submitted comments on the report and continue to work together on that. And then the last item I just wanted to update you on, since our last board meeting on May 10th, you may have seen in the papers that Governor Newsom unveiled his revised state budget. And he's closing this year's remaining $27 billion budget shortfall and next year's projected $28 billion deficit. And the way he's balancing the state budget is he's cutting one-time spending by $19 billion, and he's and the ongoing spending he wants to cut by $13.7 billion. And he hopes to cut state operations by 8%, and he wants to target an elimination of 10,000 unfilled state positions. So I checked, there's 250,000 positions in the state. So 10,000 is less than 5% that he wants to. Basically, he wants to eliminate long-term. And how is this impacting here at the Water Board? Here at the Water Board right now, State Board is only allowing us to fill about 50% of our vacancies. So we'll continue to review our priorities as we manage our workload with less staff. And I will continue to update you each month as we get new information. And that's all I have. Yeah,
I could. I had one question about the report on Hunter's Point. Maybe it was the title of the executive officer's report of the fifth five-year review. You know, by my poor math skills, it tells me it's 25 years of reports. What's the timeline for work to be largely completed and it to be in a monitoring state? I mean, you know, and relatedly, the report talks about concerns about the remedy maybe not being fully protective because of climate change and PFAS. But obviously there are other issues out there. So does it mean this report that we're satisfied with the remedy as being sufficiently protective as to everything else? And what, and I guess fundamentally, what is the timeline? When does this come to a conclusion?
So I wish I had a good answer for you. As a lifelong Bay Area resident, someone who grew up in San Francisco and who has engaged extensively since taking this role with the Hunters Point neighborhood, in fact, was emailing the head of the local community last night. I'm going to speak at the August meeting. I wish I had a better answer for you, but now that I've engaged, I see it's a very slow process. Our team here at the Water Board's doing a great job, but we're not in agreement with the Navy on some of their protectiveness measures. We want more information. And yes, it's been over 25 years since the cleanup started. I don't see it happening as quickly as we would like, but we are definitely keeping the pressure on. We're working closely with DTSC and EPA, but I'm now understanding the complexity working with a large federal agency, that it's not as quick as maybe we would like because of the bureaucracy, but we're working very closely, collaboratively with them. I can't give enough credit to our incredible team of staff here, Nathan, Mary, Jessica, Ross, who this five-year report is just massive. There's a whole team that have reviewed it. We were the ones that did not need an extension on any of our comments. Our comment letters have been very extensive. But I don't have a good answer. And as you noted, they haven't even looked at PFAS, or this was the first time they even looked at sea level rise, and they're not using what we consider the latest. So we're going to continue to keep pressure on and continue to work with them, and we're going to continue to engage with the community.
Yeah. I echo what Dr. Gunther said before, at least on this issue. I'd be happy to help. It's sort of, trying to choose my words carefully, surprising anyway, that we're still here. I mean, this has been such a longstanding issue, particularly with the focus on environmental justice. It just cries out for real more attention. I know you're giving all you can, but.
Yeah, and we in DTSC have been really making it a priority, really engaging, going to the community meetings. We were there in May. I have a conflict. She wanted me to come next week, but I'm going to be coming again in August and speaking with them. And there's part of it, too, just educating them about the community. Keith's going to come with me. We're going to talk about stormwater pollution and their concerns. So we're engaging. We're only part of the puzzle with working. You know, we have our authority with water quality, and then DTSC has theirs with the radioactive, and there's EPA. So having so many regulatory agencies, San Francisco Department of Public Health's involved, makes it a long process, but we're all working on it. We're working together. At least we share a common goal of cleaning it up and as quickly as possible.
I've lost track, given the parcel by parcel emphasis that's been taken, I've lost track of whether there was ever a final remedy or whether the final remedy is still in the future as a more comprehensive umbrella around these different components. And so perhaps a future update in the EO report for us on what does the longer term, what's the Navy's estimate of when they're in final remedy and other components that have yet to be fully resolved?
And I think that that's appropriate for us to give you another update because they're holding a meeting later this month. So we've submitted all these comments. DTSC has submitted comments, EPA. And so what we want to understand is how much are they addressing our comments, or are the comments just going in a file and not being addressed? So we'll know more in another month. I think it's June 25th is the public meeting, and we'll find out how they address our comments or if they address the comments.
That's it for me. Thank you.
Anything further?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Let's proceed. Go ahead.
Two quick questions. How many empty positions do we have?
We currently have 10 vacant positions, and I got approval on Monday to fill 5 of them.
Secondly, I just wanted to, in the executive office report, there's a section about the EIR, EIS being conducted for the Corps of Engineers dredging program. I am very, very enthusiastic about the prospects that we can structure our permit in a way that will incentivize the Corps to do more beneficial reuse in the Bay Area using their own money. And this will, as I understand it, inevitably come to us in the form of having to make some judgments about trade-offs of potential impacts versus potential benefits. And will we have a opportunity to discuss this prior to the scheduled permit hearing in the winter?
Spring of next year. Yeah, we could, and we could do a separate briefing for you since you're also involved in BCDC. But yeah, the actual adoption will be spring of next year. And we could provide an info item if you want, or we could do a separate briefing. We can work with you.
Well, it's the connection of this to our other goals around wetlands restoration that I think is an important thing for us to be fully informed about as this goes forward. I will leave it to you to tell us when. But to me, there's enough things going on there that it would be worthwhile to at least get some information about it before the hearing in the spring.
Sure, and we can do that.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, thank you for this suggestion.
I think that that is a very heavy lift for our team, a new CEQA NEPA document as well as the permit. So we look forward to the progress in that area. Thanks for bringing that up. All right, anything further? If not, let's move on. I'm going to administer the oath for today's hearing. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested parties. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this process. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth? Thank you. And now, Eileen, would you continue with the board items on our calendar for today?
Sure. So we've heard that someone wants to speak regarding item 5A, the NPDES permit for Felix 66. So I recommend that we pull that item from the uncontested calendar and hear it separately immediately after acting on the uncontested items. Items 5B and 5C are the reissuance of two NPDES permits for wastewater facilities. Item 5D is the reissuance of waste discharge requirements and water quality certification for the East Bay Regional Park District routine operation and maintenance activities in its park system. East Bay Regional Park District has been conducting routine operation and maintenance activities under a programmatic order since 2004. Work must be completed consistent with the district's routine operation and maintenance activities manual, like the programmatic stream maintenance programs the board has authorized for flood districts across the Bay Area. New for this reissuance is that the East Bay Regional Park District's manual and the order has been updated to include actions to control harmful algae blooms, work which was previously authorized separately. We didn't receive any comments on this item, and district staff are available to answer any questions. And then next I'll cover item 5E, which is also uncontested. Item 5E would authorize the filling of wetlands and stream channels associated with a residential industrial development. Ordinarily, we would have authorized the project administratively through a Clean Water Act Section 401 water quality certification. However, the Supreme Court decision last year limiting the extent of federal waters meant the Corps of Engineers disclaimed jurisdiction over the creeks and wetlands at this site, determining that they were isolated. As a result, there's no federal permit and no associated water quality certification. Because the waters are waters of the state, we retain jurisdiction and can regulate the fill-in through the waste discharge requirements. This tentative order includes standard requirements ensuring that the project has avoided, minimized, and mitigated its impacts. We did not receive any comments on this, and KP Home staff are available to answer any questions. So those are items 5A, B, 5B, C, D, and E, and we're available to answer any questions on those items.
All right, what I'd like to do is ask board members for questions or comments on B, C, D, and E. And then I'll open the forum for public comment. Let's start with that, and then we'll come back to item 5A and deal with a few matters.
Madam Chair, I'm going to accuse myself from matter C, the Crockett matter, because my firm represents that entity.
So noted.
Unrelated matter.
I think it might be clean if we take each of B, C, D, and E votes separately. And then we'll finish with those, and then we'll turn to 5A, from which you may. So, okay. So.
And actually, while we're at it, I'll just also recuse myself from 5A. As I have a small financial interest in stock holdings with Phillips 66, so I'm going to recuse myself from that one also.
I'd like to ask Council, do we need to do anything procedurally to remove 5A from the uncontested calendar? Okay, very good. Let's move ahead then with B, C, D, and E. Board member comments and questions. Go ahead, Board Member Ransom, and then Board Member Batty.
I just had a quick one on 5E. I noticed in the documents, first there's the WDR, and then there's a deed restriction. So my question is more around longer term with the HOA involved in this development. So, you know, I've had a fair amount of experience with HOAs, so just wanted to make sure, like I couldn't see it clearly, that entity is going to be managed and funded appropriately, because it appears that there's a lot of stuff to do for a long time into the future. So that was just really an observation when I was looking through the details.
Right, and we don't get into the HOA as far as checking their, you know, how much money they have. That, you know, they've got all the documents, and we regulate what we regulate in our authority. So we'll regulate if they're not abiding by the WDRs, then that would be an issue for us. Go ahead.
And also, there is an endowment being established for the long-term maintenance of the mitigation features that the project is creating at the site. And we do review the CCNRs for the HOAs to ensure that they do cover the mitigation management, that they'll be usually hiring somebody to do the maintenance, and also for the long-term stormwater treatment procedures. We look at the CCNRs to make sure those are adequately covered.
Good. That's really what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Board Member Batty.
Thank you. I'm just going to comment on 5D, East Bay Regional Park District, who has taken care of those lands so well for so many years. Just thank you, and what a thorough document they have in place to manage those lands. And on KB Homes, I appreciate Mark's question. And I also was just curious, is that the first permit that we've taken through without core jurisdiction on wetlands, on isolated wetlands? And how, I'm trying to understand how heavy a lift that is for us when the Corps is not involved.
Well, the short answer is it's not the first authorization. There's a statewide authorization for smaller projects that don't have federal waters, and we've, Ms. Batty, I lost track of the number of notices of applicability we've issued for that. It's not a huge number, but with that said, obviously the public notice and engagement process and the time to get before the board by itself is a much heavier lift than were the executive officer simply to sign off on a certification. Of greater interest is that the Corps plays a significant role for creek and wetland fill projects in two regards. One is consulting with federal agencies on species protections, and the other one is in completing jurisdictional delineations for which the Corps staff have of wetlands. So, hey, what's the playing field? What do we have on the site? And while we have some of that expertise in-house, and we are developing more in anticipation of the Corps stepping back, that will be also significantly greater time investment for these projects.
I did have, going back to the Katie Holmes, KB Holmes matter. Going back to the KB Holmes matter, I was curious about the deed restriction. I don't recall ever having seen a deed restriction that's as comprehensive as this one, particularly with a residential setting. Is this typical, or is this sort of new?
I can just sign. Yeah, I sign deed restrictions are my responsibility, and a lot of them come through me. I'm signing multiple deed restrictions every month for different property that, in particular, the groundwater and toxic sites divisions have worked on, and there's certain requirements. So it's, yeah, and they're very comprehensive. A notary comes, and staff does a really good job. It takes a while to get them there, but multiple deed restrictions I'm signing every single month.
Yeah, I don't, have we done it with, this is a gigantic residential development.
Yeah.
Have we done it for something like this on an old mine site? I was really fascinated by it.
I mean, I've got 2 years of experience doing it. We haven't done it on an old mine site. We've done it on development sites. I'm not sure if it's quite as big as this one. I think this is probably one of the bigger ones.
Yeah, thanks.
Does the team want to add anything, Keith? No?
No, I think Eileen covered it. Thanks.
Okay. Further questions? Board Letty? All right. I just wanted to, on West County Agency with West County and Richmond, I wanted to thank the discharger for their investment in the upgraded treatment facilities, very necessary, and I was glad to see them continued into this permit. And I want to thank the permit writer, Carrie O'Connor, for a lot of work. On Crockett, thank you to William Burrell, and to the discharger for having no Category 1 SSOs, which I thought was a good place to be. Regional Park District, thank you, Brian Lines, and for the upgrade in the maintenance manual for, as Jane noted, these very well-maintained areas. And Brian also brought home the KB Home item. So lots of work by staff, and thank you to the team that worked on this. The board had a very extensive packet of these permits, and I appreciate how much work went into them from the staff and the management team. So thank you. Any further comments on these items? And if not, I'd like to turn to our executive officer for her recommendation on 5B, C, D, and E.
Great. So maybe we can group knowing Bill's...
We're going to take them individually.
Okay, so then great. And I'll just say I recommend the board approve item 5B, C, D, and E, but we'll do them separately. So 5B, I recommend the board approve.
Thank you. I'd like to ask for a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Very good. And Julie, could you call the vote on each of these, please?
Just confirming, Chair.
Just on B. Could you call the vote on B?
Board Member Batty was the motion, and Board Member Ransom was the second. Okay. Thank you. Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelin.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye. All right. May I have a motion and a second on 5C?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Again, for the court reporter, that was Board Member Batty and Board Member Gunther. Board Member Young, or Vice Chair Young? Oh, no, I got it right. Okay, thank you. Board Member Gunther. All right. Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelin.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Recused.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye.
Thank you.
May I have a motion and a second on item 5D, the East Bay Regional Park District?
So moved.
Second.
That was Board Member Batty and Board Member Beelin.
Correct.
Thank you.
Would you call the vote?
Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelin.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye. All right. Item 5E, KB Home. May I have a motion and a second, please?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Board Member Batty and seconded by Board Member Beelen. Would you call the roll?
Thank you. Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelen.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye. Thank you very much for your patience. I'm going to turn it back to our executive officer so we can address item 5A.
Great, thank you. And I think there may be a public speaker, but I'll introduce the item first. Thank you. So this is an MPDS permit reissuance for the Phillips 66 refinery. The most significant change with this permit reissuance is that Phillips 66 will now process renewable feedstocks instead of petroleum feedstocks. Renewable feedstocks include crop-based oils, rendered fats, and other biological oils. Phillips 66 stopped processing petroleum in February of 2024. This change will result in lower discharge flows and lower pollutant loads to San Francisco Bay. We expect selenium discharges to be substantially reduced because of this change. In comments on the tentative order posted for public comment, San Francisco Baykeeper expressed concerns regarding the selenium loads from the Phillips 66 refinery and whether the North San Francisco Bay selenium TMDL is protective enough of aquatic life. We expect selenium loads to be substantially reduced with the change from processing petroleum feedstocks, which are high in selenium, to processing renewable feedstocks, which are much lower in selenium. Because of this, Phillips 66 would like to decommission its selenium removal plant. In response to some of Baykeeper's concerns, we revised the tentative order to require that Phillips 66 conduct a study that demonstrate that selenium removal plant does not remove a statistically significant amount of selenium before it decommissions it. As for Baykeeper's concerns about the North San Francisco Bay selenium TMDL, we defer to the upcoming triennial review plan for later this year. That's the process the board uses to consider feedback regarding the basin plan and prioritizes projects to update the basin plan. I'd like to also remind you that we are gathering additional information to ensure that any further regulatory decisions related to selenium are made with the best available information. In 2023, we required Martinez Refinery Company, the largest discharger of selenium to the bay, to investigate the impacts of its selenium discharges on aquatic life. We expect a final report on that investigation in February of 2026. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to open this for board member questions or comments. Vice Chair Young.
I just want to, what was the length of time for operating the selenium removal plant to prove it's not removing a statistically significant amount?
We want to get their report. And go ahead.
Sure. It's about 6 months.
Yeah.
What they're going to do. Yep.
Further questions to my right? I noted that in the package, we spoke of a lower pollution load to the bay overall. Is there a way to quantify that either by percentage or in general terms?
Probably more in general terms. I mean, the Tesoro refinery shift to renewable feedstocks a couple of years ago, and we're seeing selenium loads reduce 60 to 70%, at least with that discharge. And low metal loads to the bay, so we expect to see something similar from Phillips 66.
Super. I wanted in this case to thank our permit writer who had to come up with new technology-based limits, new toxicity limits, and appreciate John Madigan's work on this permit. If there are no further comments from the board, we may have comments from the public. And I'd like to start with any comments for those in the room. If you'd like to speak, please come on down.
Actually, Chair Hacker, we'd like to start with the person on Zoom from Baykeeper, Eric Berchet.
Very well. Please go ahead.
Boucher.
Eric, when you're ready, please start.
Good morning, Chair Hacker and members of the board, Executive Officer White. I will note that I took the oath this morning, and I will make three quick points on this permit reissuance. First, as Executive Officer described, the changes to the draft permit, which were made in response to our comments to require monitoring and data to inform the decision to decommission the selenium removal plant, are changes that we support. Those changes transformed an arbitrary and speculative choice into a decision that will be made based on science and evidence. Using evidence and science and data to make decisions is the board's obligation. And while the changes in this case addressed that failure, we're concerned that it took nonprofit organizations watchdogging the board to ensure that those decisions were made based on the evidence that would be available. Second, I want to caution the board and the executive officer in against rubber stamping the ultimate decommissioning of the selenium removal plant. While it appears that the volume and type of selenium are likely to be reduced due to the change from petroleum feedstocks to renewable biofuels, if that change is 60 to 70% reduction, that leaves a lot of selenium left in the system and in the discharges from the facility that could be treated through use of the selenium removal plant. And if the reason the current selenium removal plant is ineffective is due to the type of selenium being discharged into the bay, in Baykeeper's view, that is a reason to improve the treatment system, not to decommission the removal plant. And then the third point I would like to make is big picture, Baykeeper remains concerned that the TMDL for selenium in the North Bay is outdated and inadequate to protect fish and related beneficial uses. And while the board has repeatedly expressed its interest or intent to update that TMDL and has repeatedly stated to Baykeeper and to members of the public that it recognizes the gravity of the harm and the concerns and the impacts of selenium on fisheries and the communities that depend on them and the associated beneficial uses. Staff's response and the description again today details a timeline that we think is far too slow and far too distant in the future with respect to updating that TMDL. The additional information due from Martinez Refinery and the San Francisco Estuary Institute is set to come in February of 2026. And if staff and the board think that they need to wait for that information in order to start the update process, we will not have an updated TMDL before the 2027 triennial review, let alone one that happens on this cycle. The evidence is clear, and the scientific information available since the TMDL was adopted is sufficient for the board to make that determination now or in the 2024 triennial review cycle, not wait until 2026. I thank the staff for their changes to the permit and the board for its time today, and look forward to continuing to work on reducing the impact of selenium in the bay. Thank you.
Thank you for your thoughtful comments, and I'm sure the board will want to stay engaged with our management team around what is possible with regard to selenium. So thank you to you and to Baykeeper for your involvement. Are there any further online commenters? No? Is there anyone in the room that wishes to comment?
We do have two individuals that have registered in person.
And would you call them? Who's first?
Craig John
first. Please.
Followed by Kevin Buchan.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. My name is Craig Johns. I am the program manager for the Partnership for Sound Science and Environmental Policy. I'm delighted to be here again. I won't take very long. I just have a couple of comments. But first, I just wanted to note, as I was driving across the Benicia Bridge this morning, I'm seeing fewer and fewer ships that are in the, I forget what it's called, those ships we tried to get rid of for many, many decades. And Mothball. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure seeing them disappear, even as slowly as perhaps they are. We never accomplished that years ago.
But for the regional board, right?
Absolutely. Very brief comment. First of all, appreciate all of the work that the staff has put into this and so many other permits. They do a fantastic job trying to balance all of the issues and the interests that you've heard and perhaps read comments from. So we want to recognize Mr. Madigan and obviously Robert Schliff and everybody else from the staff that have worked on this. I only wanted to point out one thing. I don't know if my number is exact, and perhaps somebody else on staff or otherwise might know it, but I think that actually the transition at P66 to renewable biofuels is going to see a reduction in around 85% at a minimum. So I think that's important to keep in mind. And we certainly support the staff's recommendation to move forward with this permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Buchan.
Good morning, Board Chair, members of the board. Kevin Buchan with WSPA. I'll just retract my request for speaking. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you for coming in person. Do board members have any questions for any of our three speakers? Mr. Gunther.
Are there any chemicals being discharged from this renewable energy facility that are increasing in concentration or mass compared to the when it was refining crude oil?
We're worried about is nickel. That was a little bit higher when Tesoro did its study a couple of years ago and we did that permit, so we included a limit for that.
And do we know, as I understand it, the facility is gathering feedstock from a large variety of sources. So, and I know that when we were concerned about selenium, we were concerned about crude oil from San Joaquin Valley, for example. I mean, are there certain vegetable oils that are high in nickel, or do we know where that's coming from?
You know, I'm unsure where it's coming from. It's more done as a precautionary measure because we don't actually have data yet from this facility. And when we looked into it a few years ago, it was just added as a pollutant of concern.
Okay, so we think it might be discharged, but we don't know that it is being discharged.
That's exactly right. So that's why we're including a limit for it. So okay. It's possible nickelodeons.
And then because we're dealing with a brand new feedstock and we're dealing with a what seems to me, at least as I understand it, to be highly variable source materials, is there a different kind of monitoring protocol that's in place for the discharge so that we can track probably in more detail what the daily variation is and for a variety of substances? Or do we think that all comes out in the wash?
The monitoring program is very similar to the existing one, which is pretty robust. So for selenium, we're continuing weekly monitoring just as a check through this permit term. For most metals, they monitor at least once a month. And then for acute toxicity, they're still doing it weekly to ensure there aren't any toxic impacts. So we feel like we have a robust monitoring program to capture what's going on there.
Thank you. Any other questions with regard to this? All right. Let's take this matter up. May I please have a motion and a second to approve the NPDES permit for the Phillips 66 refinery?
So moved.
I'll second.
All right. Moved by Board Member Ransom and second by Board Member Young. Julie, could you please take a roll call vote?
Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelan.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger as recused. Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye. Thank you so much. Thank you to all on this matter. I'd like to suggest we take a 1 minute break just to bring back Board Member Kissinger and get on with the item 6 basin plan agenda item. All right, we are ready for item 6 on today's calendar. We have reconvened after our break and we have established a quorum. So to our executive officer.
Thank you, Chair Hacker. In July 2022, the regional board adopted a previous version of the Basin Plan Amendment. After adoption, Regional Water Board staff opted to revise the amendment to refine the language after discussions with the State Water Resources Control Board. The proposed amendment does not substantively change the previous version of the Basin Plan Amendment and makes clarifying changes and remains non-regulatory. Christina Toms, Water Resources Control Engineer in the Planning Division, will provide a presentation on the proposed Basin Plan Amendment. Go ahead, Christina.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Christina Toms. I'm a Water Resource Control Engineer in the Planning and TMDL Division, and I'm excited to present our proposed Basin Plan Amendment on Climate Change and Shoreline Adaptation. Today's presentation that you're going to see echoes a similar one that we made to the board in 2022, again, in which we discussed a previous version of the Basin Plan Amendment. After discussion with State Board staff, we jointly decided to revise the previous amendment to refine its language. These revisions do not substantively change the amendment from the version originally proposed in 2022. Instead, they provide further clarity on the amendment, including its non-regulatory nature. We hope that this proposed amendment will be the first in a series that will help protect the region's waters from the effects of climate change. Next slide, please. Today, we'll first present the purpose of the proposed amendment, then project planning efforts to date. And finally, the majority of the presentation will describe the elements of the proposed amendment. Next slide, please. The Water Quality Control Plan for the San Francisco Basin, or Basin Plan, is the Water Board's master water quality control planning document. The purpose of the proposed non-regulatory amendment is twofold. First, it will update the Basin Plan to include information on how climate change impacts water quality. Second, it will update the Basin Plan to include information that may be useful for shoreline adaptation projects. Next slide, please. It's important to emphasize that the proposed Basin Plan Amendment is non-regulatory and does not promulgate any new policies or requirements. We have pursued this path for multiple reasons. First, the proposed amendment furthers our collaborative efforts with the regulated community and partner agencies on permitting coastal projects, especially climate change adaptation projects. Moving forward, we want to use the information we gather to further inform the need for a potential future regulatory basin plan amendment. Second, it supports our goal of being a transparent regulatory agency by documenting information that we already provide to project proponents. Third, the proposed amendment is meant to be informative and adds information to the basin plan that may be useful for permitting. Next, we'll go through the process that got us here. Next slide, please. Updating the basin plan to include considerations related to climate change has been a priority of the board since 2015. That same year, the California Coastal Conservancy and its partners, including the Water Board, released a science update to the Baylands Ecosystem Habitat Goals. This update highlighted the need to accelerate the restoration of connected, complex Baylan habitats by 2030. In 2018, the Water Board held a series of workshops to discuss our wastewater and fill policies within the context of climate change. In 2019, the San Francisco Bay Shoreline Adaptation Atlas was released. Funded by the Water Board and prepared by the San Francisco Estuary Institute and the urban planning nonprofit SPUR, the Adaptation Atlas describes a science-based framework for where natural and nature-based climate change adaptation approaches can support resilient built and natural communities along the margins of the bay. Later that year, we released a staff report that described a suite of options for amending the Basin Plan to address the challenge of climate change. In 2022, the board unanimously adopted a previous version of the Basin Plan Amendment. The State Board did not decline to approve our previous version. Again, after discussion with State Board staff, we jointly decided to revise the Basin Plan Amendment to refine its language. These revisions do not substantively change the amendment. Instead, they provide further clarity regarding the amendment's non-regulatory nature and related elements. Next slide, please. Our proposed changes to the Basin Plan include a new section in Chapter 1, the Introduction, that describes the influence of our changing climate on the environment through increases in global temperatures, sea levels, and the timing, intensity, frequency, and duration of extreme weather and climate events. These changes impact water quality through multiple mechanisms, including through droughts and heat waves that can desiccate streams. Next slide, please. And drive catastrophic wildfires that change patterns of sediment delivery in watersheds. Next slide, please. Extreme storms are causing more severe floods. Next slide. Especially in areas where tidal drainage is limited by rising sea levels. Next slide. Climate change is driving ocean acidification, hypoxia. Next slide. And more frequent and widespread harmful algal blooms with subsequent shifts in aquatic species composition. Rising seas can also drive the rise of nearshore groundwater, which can in turn drive saltwater and vapor intrusion and the mobilization and spread of contaminants in groundwater. The Bay Area is already experiencing many of these impacts, and the best available science tells us that these impacts are expected to become even more severe and widespread in the future. Next slide, please. The heart of our proposed Basin Plan Amendment is a new section on climate change and aquatic habitat protection, management, and restoration. It provides information to assist in the planning and development of climate adaptation and other shoreline projects based on the Water Board's review of the evolving climate change science and its knowledge and expertise in coastal and estuarine management and permitting. This information is based on science in the Habitat Goals Reports, Adaptation Atlas, and related technical resources that emphasize the importance of long-term, landscape-scale, nature-based approaches to climate change adaptation. Consider a metaphor using the sublime water-themed quilts of celebrated Palo Alto artist Linda Gass. Think of our region's coastal landscapes as a quilt with different colored patches representing different habitats such as open water, wetlands, mudflats, and beaches. Climate change threatens to turn these complex, dynamic, colorful mosaics of habitats into a simple, static, almost monotone canvas. But if our region collectively takes a thoughtful, long-term approach to climate change adaptation that emphasizes complex, connected nature-based solutions, these habitats and the plants, wildlife, and people that depend on them can adjust and move into new locations and configurations. Next slide. Over time, the landscape can evolve into a new quilt, one in which the patches of habitats are arranged differently, but with similar proportions and distributions across the whole. Next slide, please. The first piece of new information that emphasizes that climate adaptation projects that utilize the best available science in the design of dredge and fill activities are more likely to achieve their intended adaptation goals and objectives. Starting from the upper left and moving clockwise, this slide highlights the California Sea Level Rise Guidance, Habitat Goals Update, Sediment for Survival Report, New Life for Eroding Shorelines Report, and the Adaptation Atlas. The resources shown here and their supporting technical literature are examples of the many helpful starting places for decision makers seeking the best available science on reasonably foreseeable changes in sea levels, seasonal precipitation, watershed runoff, salinity, nearshore groundwater levels, wave events, and sediment supplies. Next slide, please. The second piece of new information highlights the utility of phased adaptation strategies, a conceptual example of which is shown on this slide. Phased adaptation strategies can help decision makers identify a sequence of actions that provide gradually increasing levels of flood protection over time based on predetermined thresholds instead of arbitrary timelines. In the example shown on the slide, initial actions that build beaches and recharge local sediment supplies buy time for later actions that prepare adjacent landscapes to support the sea level rise driven of transgression of habitats inland and upslope. These approaches can accommodate uncertainty about the timing and severity of climate change impacts and allow for flexibility over time. Next slide, please. The third piece of new information highlights the utility of landscape scale cross-jurisdictional planning frameworks. The effects of climate change aren't limited by traditional political boundaries such as parcels, cities, and counties. The Bay and Pacific Ocean are interconnected systems, and what happens along one portion of a shoreline can affect other segments. Therefore, it's important for projects in shorelines and coastal waters to be planned and implemented in a spatial framework that accounts for this connectivity. The Adaptation Atlas provides a potential framework for this by classifying the entire bay into 30 operational landscape units that cross traditional political boundaries but adhere to those of natural shoreline processes such as tides, waves, and sediment movement. OLUs and similar cross-jurisdictional frameworks can support planning for projects that minimize cumulative impacts across a landscape and allow habitats to adjust in response to climate change. The Water Board has funded the San Francisco Estuary Institute to develop phased adaptation strategies like the one described in the previous slide for the Bay Point Operational Landscape Unit along the northern shoreline of Contra Costa County. Next slide. As well as the San Leandro Operational Landscape Unit in Alameda County. Next slide. Next slide, please. The fourth piece of new information describes how nature-based approaches and hybrid measures that integrate nature with engineered structural approaches can help create resilient shorelines that support co-benefits, such as recreation and habitat for native species. Projects that maximize the use of nature-based features and minimize reliance on gray infrastructure are more likely to avoid or minimize negative impacts to waters of the state and beneficial uses, and increase positive impacts than projects that rely solely on gray infrastructure. The Basin Plan Amendment highlights nature-based approaches such as living shorelines, including projects to establish oyster and eelgrass habitat. Next slide. Beach creation, enhancement, and restoration. Next slide. Wetland protection, enhancement, and restoration. Next slide. Estuary watershed reconnection, in which flood control channels are reconnected to baylands. Next slide. Strategic sediment placement, in which dredge sediment is beneficially reused to help bayland habitats maintain elevations relative to rising sea levels. Next slide. Gradually sloped ecotone levees and wastewater seepage or horizontal levees that beneficially reuse treated wastewater to recreate freshwater and brackish marshes around bay margins. Next slide. Okay. And can we go to the next slide, please? Thank you. And migration space preparation that facilitates the long-term sea level rise transgression of estuarine wetland habitats over adjacent uplands. Next slide, please. The fifth piece of new information highlights that to support resilient landscapes, it is important to understand the reasonably foreseeable conditions from climate change. This includes understanding the physical and ecological drivers of beneficial uses and habitat resilience, the landscape processes that influence the location, distribution, and condition of habitats, the influence of proposed dredge and fill activities on these processes, and how dredge and fill activities may be necessary to convert one kind of water of the state to another. Identifying and understanding these interactions can help projects achieve their adaptation goals while supporting healthy, diverse, connected landscapes. Next slide, please. Finally, the sixth piece of new information describes how dredge and fill activities in coastal areas may be necessary to improve the resilience of these habitats to climate change. For example, the photo here shows how Surfers Beach in Half Moon Bay is completely submerged during high tides, periods of large sustained swell, and other high water events. The combined effects of coastal armoring and sea level rise have created a scenario where, absent intervention, the beach could be underwater under most future tidal conditions. This phenomenon, called coastal squeeze, is common in many Bay Area shorelines and is only expected to get worse as sea levels continue to rise. Next slide. Before taking questions, I'd like to note that we made a minor editorial correction to the staff report after public review. The correction removed two erroneous references to an environmental checklist appendix that does not exist. We also need to make a similar change to finding 10 in the resolution by striking the following words in the first sentence. The Regional Water Board prepared a substitute environmental document for the proposed basin plan amendment. However, thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any clarifying questions.
Thank you very much. I'd like to entertain board member comments and questions. Board Member Gunther?
I just want to make sure I understand. We don't often get do-overs in life, and you guys are getting a do-over here 2 years after we discussed this previously. And is the idea that we're only making kind of administrative changes based on discussions with the legal staff at the state board, and we're not taking the opportunity maybe to rethink some things now after we've had 2 years to kind of consider, is that so we're not like opening up the whole thing and rethinking it?
No, we're not opening up and rethinking.
Right. And the question then is, 2 years on, how does it look to you? Like, if you had the time and effort, would you reopen and do other things? Or do you feel like this is going to serve us really well?
No, I feel that this continues to be a really strong document. And technically, the only documents that have come out recently since the July 2022 adoption have been further technical updates to the adaptation atlas that have just further refined our technical thoughts and the state of the science, but those are all included as appendices they're all considered updates to the original adaptation atlas. There's been no fundamental changes in the science that would cause us to rethink any of the concepts that we discussed in the basin plan amendment.
Okay, great. This reminds me of what Tony Lazarowitz at Yale has started to talk about these kind of things as that we are all like the people who built the cathedrals in the Middle Ages, and that we're starting now building the foundation. We know we won't see the building as completed. That will be for our descendants, but we're engaged in it with that vision in mind. And that's what I think we're doing here. And I think it's really great.
Yuri?
Dr. Gunter, if I can just clarify one thing. The State Board did not disapprove of the amendment. They didn't compel us to do this amendment over again. It was that there were some clarity issues, and so we volunteered to just dispense with the confusion and reformat it. For example, we had questions on the information for climate adaptation projects, and we decided, okay, the questions are confusing. Let's turn them into statements so that it's clearer. So that's basically what we did.
Board Member Kissinger.
It's a great document, and I appreciate the clarifications. I think, and this is based on, I confess, a relatively quick reading, my takeaway from it was we have unbelievably challenging issues ahead of us. I mean, the takeaway was that there's insufficient sediment to meet the rise in sea level, and that natural processes won't get it done. And it's not clear that the measures that you're talking about here will get it done in terms of protecting the wetlands that we have. And so anyway, I came away from it impressed by the document, but discouraged that there are really formidable issues ahead of us. So, but I appreciate the hard work that went into this.
Okay, very well. Let me go to the end. Board Member Batty?
You know I'm going to have something to say. First of all, thank you to the staff. I mean, this has been a long time in coming, a ton of work, very thoughtfully done. I think really sets a framework of what the truth of the science is and where we are and what we need to be paying attention to. That is incredibly important. I had a conversation just yesterday with someone in the Bay Area about the realities of climate change or not. So it really leads me to my question for you, and also maybe a challenge to our whole board as well, is how do we get information out about this? How do we get it out into the community, not just on our website, but how do we have any resources to communicate it, or can we come up, or is there a communication plan?
Well, I would say as part of us going out into the communities, when we meet with communities, we are talking about climate change. We have our strategic work plan. We have our three organizational priorities. And, you know, we have advancing racial equity and environmental justice, climate change, and workforce planning. So we're always referring, and, you know, at the CARES meeting, I talked about our three organizational priorities, of which climate change is. And so I think now it's really great that it's now in our basin plan. So I'm real excited about this basin plan amendment and the clarifications, as Yuri described, I think will make it easier for people to really understand. So it's just part of our outreach when we go out in the community is definitely talking about climate change.
Okay, great. And I will just say throw this out to the board members, Rotary clubs, local community organizations, LinkedIn, whatever it is, you know, we all are in lots of different circles, and maybe Eileen, we can get some materials from you, PowerPoint slides or whatever that might help tell the story, and obviously this write-up, but I think we should not be lulled into any great sense that even though we understand it all, that everyone understands it all and is making it a priority. So I hope we can all, get the word out.
Yeah, and we could make available the slides that Christina used today with the speaker notes that you all would have.
Perfect.
When you're going out in the community. There are great speaker notes accompanying it. So I think that would be great. And they're great slides. A great job.
Thank you again.
You want to add anything?
Not much to add. I mean, we are participating in work groups such as the Oakland Alameda Estuary Adaptation Committee. And so we're bringing it to the, just to give you a concrete example, we're bringing it to a community. We're also funding SFEI to look at sediment in watersheds and adaptation measures in watersheds. And we just had a work group in Petaluma to talk about sediment in particular and where to get sediment for adaptation. And through these forums, we're able to communicate a lot of this information. We'll certainly accept additional help. I've also spoke at a Rotary Club, Foster City, but we can always use more help.
I do want to just add on one thing. I forgot. I also did want to share. I met just yesterday. There is a brand new accelerator incubator in Half Moon Bay, private company incubator, and it is funded through various sources. Their entire focus is on what they're calling res tech. So there's a new term. It's resiliency tech. It's all about adaptation and mitigation, from packaging to sea level rise to fire to electric transmission systems. Literally a month old. So maybe at some point I can share more about it. But there's really some exciting and hopeful things happening.
Thank you. Board Member Ransom? Board Member Young?
Very well. I wanted to thank you, Christina, for just sticking with it through a very long period of time to prepare the original amendment that the board took up and to update it. It was very well received, and thank you for the lovely presentation. So thank you to the whole team. And I'd like to now ask our executive officer for her recommendation.
Great. I recommend the board adopt the proposed.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I neglected to ask if there are public comments on this matter. Are there any online comments or anyone in the room to comment? My mistake. Thank you. Let me return it to you.
Great. No, thank you, Chair Hacker. I recommend the board adopt the proposed amendment to the Water Quality Control Plan for the San Francisco Bay Basin to include information on climate change and shoreline adaptation.
Excuse me, Chair Hacker. Excuse me. So I just want to remind you that there's a correction to the resolution. So the motion should reflect that the resolution is changed in accordance with what Christina stated.
Yeah. Indeed. And so, Christina, if you could help us recap the two changes that you suggested, and then I will ask for a motion, because I was trying to capture that and failed.
Sure. So the two changes, one is a minor editorial correction to the staff report that we implemented after public review. That correction removes two erroneous references to an environmental checklist appendix that does not exist. The second is a change we need to make, a similar change to finding 10 in the resolution by striking the words, quote, "The Regional Water Board prepared a substitute environmental document for the proposed BPA. However," end quote. That's what we're striking.
Thank you.
To be very clear, the new finding would read the proposed basin plan amendment.
Can you move your phone? Thanks.
The proposed basin plan amendment is not a project within the meaning of the California Environmental Quality Act, because it will neither cause a direct physical change in the environment or a reasonably foreseeable indirect change. And then it cites the public resource code. As a result, the proposed basin plan amendment is not subject to the California Environmental Quality Act.
Thank you. And I will ask you after the meeting adjourns to follow up with our board clerk to make sure we have that accurately. May I have a motion and a second, please?
I'll move.
Second.
Board Member Kissinger moved. Board Member Beelen seconded. Would you call the roll?
Thank you. Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Beelen.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Aye.
Oops, sorry.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye.
And Chair Hacker.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. The board is now going to meet in closed session on item 8, personnel, and on item 9, pending litigation. For the pending litigation item, we will discuss the Sweeney and the City and County of San Francisco matters identified in the first and third bullets under item 9. I will note that Board Member Kissinger is recused from the San Francisco matter. We are going to momentarily stop our recording and move to room 1505. We will reconvene here in the auditorium in, I would say, no less than 2 hours. And I will then adjourn the meeting with any update. Thank you for your patience. And let's take 10 minutes and reconvene in room 1505 for our closed session. Is there anything further from our attorneys or from the team here? Very well. We are adjourned for now. Ready, Julie? Okay. This is Alexis Strauss-Hacker. I am reporting back from the board's closed session. There was no correspondence received for today's meeting, and there are no announcements from our closed session. This concludes the public session of the June 12th, 2024 San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board meeting. Thank you all for joining us. We do appreciate your engagement and invite you to join us for our next meeting on July 10th, 2024, in the auditorium here in the Harris Building.